Good morning, everyone. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today about enforcement of college campus tobacco-free policies. And I have nothing to disclose before I begin. And I would actually like to recognize my collaborators. One of them in the back of the room is Maria Roditas from Southern Illinois University, Carbondale. And as was already mentioned, another one of my collaborators is Dr. Stan Glantz at UCSF. So tobacco-free college campus policies have the potential to be a very cost-effective and high-impact strategy to reduce secondhand smoke and also to change the social norms around smoking to reduce smoking rates among young adults. And I'm sure I don't have to tell many of you in the room how important this is, as the vast majority, if not all, adult daily smokers begin when they're young adults. This age group is actually the youngest age that the tobacco industry can legally target, and young adults smoke at rates higher than any other age group. And so we have seen some evidence that tobacco-free college campus policies are effective. They're largely effective. This is showing you some work that we did previously looking at tobacco-free college campus policies and how they affect individuals being exposed to secondhand smoke. And we found that as a tobacco-free campus policy becomes more restrictive, the kids on the campus they're less likely to see people smoking, and they're less likely to be exposed to secondhand smoke. However, while we look at this and see this is such a positive trend, we do have to stop and think, why is it that more than 50% of students on a comprehensive tobacco-free campus policy have seen someone smoking on campus in the past 30 days, and almost 40% of them say they were exposed to secondhand smoke on their campus just in the past week? So I would imagine that many of you are working on college campuses that are tobacco-free, and you may notice this as well, that perhaps your campus is tobacco-free, and yet you might still be seeing people on your campus smoking. So the purpose of this project was to actually delve deeper into this in a qualitative fashion, talk to people on the ground in campuses across California to find out, you know, from their perspective, what's going on, what strategies are they using to enforce, and how is compliance going on their campus. So we recruited key informants from college campuses. These were public four-year institutions across California. And we actually talked to 71 key informants, and we selected people that had four different types of tobacco policies. We talked to people with the sort of the gold standard, the tobacco-free campus policy, but also people with smoke-free policies, people with designated smoking area policies, and the minimum by law policy in California is that you cannot smoke within a certain number of feet of buildings or windows. And we did semi-structured interviews. We reached out first to people who had a role on the ground in actually implementing the policy in their college. We talked to tobacco task forces. We talked to people in student health. And from there, at each campus, explored further who it was that they said either played a key role or maybe vocal opponents. We also visited all these campuses and did intercept interviews with individuals smoking on campus to talk to them about their perceptions of the policy and compliance at their school. We had all of these interviews professionally transcribed and analyzed with content analysis using MaxQDA. And so, as this may not surprise you from the start of this presentation, all of the key informants, when they were asked what is the biggest challenge to your tobacco-free policy, they said it's compliance or enforcement. You know, we don't know what to do now. We have this policy, but we have these no smoking signs on campus, and there are people smoking right next to it. What do we do? And another person said this was the sentiment from most of them. The smoking has clearly diminished. But there are definitely people who still smoke on campus, so we are struggling with what do we do next? And how do we, or do we, get the policy to 100% compliance? And so the key informants that we talked to described to us two approaches to achieving compliance. And predominantly they viewed these as completely separate, that you were going to choose to do one or the other. All the campuses in California started off using what they called the social normative approach. The goal here is to you pass the policy, and then you raise awareness about the policy and your tobacco treatment services through signs, through media campaigns, through stories in the paper. But it also often on most campuses involves some degree of getting the community members involved to do to approach people violating the policy and asking them to not, essentially. And sometimes this comes in the form of a formal group that's put together to do this, and some campuses will just ask all of the campus community to be involved in this activity. And the idea is that this will change social norms and thus further lower smoking on campus. On the other side, the way people perceived was the idea of formal enforcement. And this could be classified as either enforcement through typical campus channels, such as student affairs, a faculty member's dean, someone's boss if they're a staff member, and also and some people were using citations or fines actually issued by their campus security or police. And this is just to further explain this idea of the social normative approach to compliance. So you would adopt a tobacco-free campus policy. And you would see an immediate reduction in smoking on campus because most people follow the rules. And then you would engage the campus community in promoting this policy. It would change the norm, and the idea is that this would naturally lead then to another reduction in smoking on campus. And one of our key informants said, it's not like you're driving fast and you're going to get a speeding ticket. This is going to be education and training. That's how we tend to enforce it, through peer pressure. So because our key informants talked about these two as very separate, we are going to present the results to you in terms of what their perceived barriers and drawbacks were, first to the social norms approach, and then to formal enforcement. And then we'll come back and talk about recommendations. So for all of the key informants that we spoke with, their main issue with the social normative approach was their feelings of frustration or discomfort with being asked to approach smokers. And these are all individuals, if you remember, for the most part, who are very active in taking a role in their tobacco-free campus policy. And the first quote comes from a faculty member with an emphasis in tobacco control. And she said to us that she does not feel able to approach smokers, but it makes her feel like a hypocrite. She said, I should be an advocate for the students, but at the same time, I just don't know how to approach a stranger. It's a courageous thing that I've not been able to get the courage to do. And so if I can't do it as a faculty member, and this is my research area, I don't know if our students are going to do it. And we also talked to another person who was really out there approaching students, but starting to feel frustrated because he felt that he was the only one. And he said, I'm just starting to think, why am I the only person out here doing this? Why are there only 5 of us when it was supposed to be the whole campus community? Another issue that came up with the social normative approach were issues with power and authority. And so people talk to us because, of course, as you all know, in academia, there can be kind of a clear power structure. And they would talk about how they chose who to approach based on how they perceived their role in the university power structure. So this individual said, when he approaches smokers, he said, I pick on the students because I'm a gray-haired professor. However, another younger faculty member said, she was about to approach these individuals smoking, but she said, as I approached, these folks were in their 40s or 50s, and so I was like, well, what if they're tenured faculty? So she decided, oh, I'm not going to say anything just in case, and we heard this across the board. Other people who were in positions of authority felt that the social norm approach without formal enforcement undermined the authority that they did have, because this supervisor said, I gave them a card, and they're just referring to the card that many campuses give out that says, this is a smoke-free campus. And he said, I told them, remember, we're a non-smoking environment, but when I see them, his employees, for the second and third and fourth time, it dilutes my authority as a leader and manager because he's not taking any action. Oh, whoops. And finally, they discussed, and many of these campuses had been using this strategy for some time, that they just perceived it was not effective, and this was leading them to cut down on approaching policy violators. This person said, at first, I started a conversation with every smoker I encountered. I'm not doing it anymore because it has not been successful in my own personal efforts. Another person said, when I see a smoker, I go up and explain the policy that this is a smoke-free campus. And I would say it's kind of 50-50 in terms of people's receptiveness in listening to me. Another person explained there was hope amongst most of the community that the signs would be enough, and people with this powerful addiction would simply say, oh, January 2nd, I guess I'm not smoking on campus anymore. We did find people working within the social normative approach who had tried to develop very creative enforcement strategies. One is a program called AIR. It stands for Approach, Inform, and Refer. And they actually trained a group of very dedicated students who were going to go out on campus and monitor for violators. And they put together scripts, videos, and whole training programs, the idea being that these students would feel more empowered to be able to go and approach someone, but also give them the tools to be sure that they were not engaging in shaming someone who's smoking or being very aggressive. And the idea is that this would help people sort of make that leap and actually be able to effectively do this. Someone else said, we track noncompliance with hotspot maps all over campus, and we meet regularly. Some student volunteers have gone around and documented where butts are appearing, where clusters of people are smoking, and then over time they have security go there, put up more signs. But she then said, and either they stop or they move somewhere else. And another campus community member had the idea that they were going to try doing selective enforcement in the future, where they had maybe one day a year where security did go around, issue citations, and that was something they were thinking of moving toward. We did, several of the campuses that we were working with were in the process of transitioning from using a social normative approach to formal enforcement. And these are the ideas about why they wanted to do that. One person said, it's a staged approach. Obviously, it would be ideal if the social normative approach had worked, but we've learned, at least in the alcohol prevention literature, that it typically requires the carrot and the stick. And someone else said, his campus tried at first without enforcement. They were just relying on people's willingness to be part of a community and accept the rules that go along with being part of the community. Once they realized it wasn't working, they put some teeth into it. So I'm going to transition now to talk about formal enforcement. There were only a couple of campuses in California at the time using formal enforcement, so we have quotes from them as well as from people using the social normative approach what they perceived as barriers to transition. And these are the main perceived drawbacks to a formal enforcement plan. Many people were very concerned about being overly punitive. For a lot of our students, a significant monetary fine could really disrupt their finances for a month. There's concern about putting something on a student record in terms of violating this type of policy. The campuses who were using enforcement were oftentimes trying to use the police. And they found barriers with this, such as it's a low priority of police officers. They would say, many of the campuses in California, they would say, we're like a small city here, you know, we have to investigate real crimes, don't have time for this issue. And there were also issues of resources where people, you know, administrators would say, well, we discussed budgets and we're just pretty confident that we don't want to use a lot of resources for this issue. So, given that it looks like the majority of our informants were using either the social norms approach or formal enforcement, and they were essentially striking out either way, we would propose that the social norms approach and formal enforcement can be used as complementary strategies. And I want to talk a little bit about smoke-free laws, community laws, because this is obviously a precedent for this. And I would like you to think back, if you can, to the 1970s. Smoking is permitted nearly everywhere. You know, people, as you can see, they're smoking on planes, elevators, literally everywhere. You know, and then we have throughout the 80s this transition to smoking sections. And by 2015, we have 26 states with 100% smoke-free laws, many places where you're not smoking in any bars, restaurants, anywhere. And these laws have achieved exactly the goal of the social normative approach. We have dramatically changed social norms around smoking. It's dramatically changed where you're going to expect to see someone smoking. However, these laws have a formal enforcement component. It's often not the police, though, as we are thinking of for campus policies. It's often a health department. It's other entities, but they do have this formal enforcement. And what typically happens is when a city rolls such a policy out, they might have to issue a few citations. That occurs, and then largely compliance falls into place. So this is an example where really both approaches together worked well. And when we talk about the social norm approach of this policy, we want to pass this policy to change the social norms. We don't want to enforce it. We just want to use peer pressure and change the social norms. We have to look at the literature. And this was a study conducted in 2007 in Oregon among teenagers. And they found a complex relationship between laws around underage drinking, social norms, and then their behavior. Well, we're not able to separate this. So they found that in communities in Oregon where there was a stricter enforcement of underage drinking laws, that teenagers reported a higher personal disapproval of alcohol use, but also they were more likely to perceive that their parents disapproved of alcohol use, and they were less likely to perceive alcohol as available and less likely to report that their peers drank. So in summary, the majority of key informants that we talked to were using a social normative approach, but they reported downsides. They were feeling frustration over their own discomfort and inability to mobilize a community to approach policy violators. They were concerned about power dynamics with that type of enforcement, as well as ultimately they came to perceive a lack of effectiveness of this strategy alone. We found few schools in California that are using formal enforcement, but schools that do primarily are relying on the police. So, in conclusion, we recommend that you, if you're in the process of making one of these policies, make an enforcement plan early. Think about what you're going to do. How are you going to enforce this policy? If you're going to use formal enforcement, do you have administrative support? Is campus security involved, or are you going to use a different type of method, a more creative method, but make this plan early? The social norms approach and formal enforcement can be synergistic strategies, and one using them together might make them more effective than using either alone. And so the social norms approach is more powerful with the potential for formal enforcement, even if that need for formal enforcement might end up being low. Thank you.